You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Evan Banks.
And I'm Deanna Lee. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's March 15th.
At a recent RAND event, a panel of five of our experts tackled emerging questions about the potential risks associated with artificial intelligence. They discussed whether these risks might be catastrophic or even existential, and how humanity can address them. To kick off the conversation, our researchers were asked what they view as the biggest risks posed by AI. Here's how they answered. The risk that Benjamin Boudreau is concerned about isn't a sudden, immediate event. Quote, "It's a set of incremental harms that worsen over time. Like climate change, AI might be a slow-moving catastrophe, one that diminishes the institutions and agency we need to live meaningful lives." Jonathan Wellburn is focused on how AI may further exacerbate inequity and inequality. "The potential worst-case scenario for me," he said, "is if capital owners own all the newest technology, all the wealth, and all the decision-making." But Wellburn also stressed that he sees humanity eventually transitioning through the technological shock of AI.
Jeff Alstott said that one of the risks that keeps him up at night is the resurrection of smallpox. Historically, what has prevented bad actors from creating bioweapons has been information and knowledge. AI could close that knowledge gap, potentially leading to devastating effects, with the launching of a pandemic, for example. Nidhi Kalra said that she's less worried about the risk of AI than she is about other challenges, such as climate change, the risk of nuclear war, and rising income inequality. One concern she does have, quote, "What does the world look like when we, even more than is already the case today, can't distinguish fact from fiction?"
Edward Geist put it bluntly, quote, "AI threatens to be an amplifier for human stupidity," he said. "For instance, consider the implications of machines that do what you ask for, rather than what you wanted or should have asked for. These machines could be making the same kind of mistakes that humans make, only faster and in larger quantities." The panel also discussed what AI policies reasonable people might agree on, even if they disagree, about whether AI poses an existential risk, the role of research as humanity moves into a new era, and how RAND can contribute. You can find the full Q&A at rand.org.
Last week, Sweden officially joined NATO, a little less than a year after its neighbor, Finland, became a member. By joining NATO, both countries broke their long-standing traditions of military non-alignment, marking a radical change in their foreign and security policies. These decisions, of course, were a direct result of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. But beyond the obvious political and symbolic value of NATO expansion in response to Russia's war, what can Finland and Sweden bring to the alliance? RAND Europe researchers explore this question in a new paper. To start, they detail both countries' defense capabilities. Finland, for example, has one of the strongest artillery forces in Europe and maintains a large conscript and reserve force, capable of mustering 280,000 troops within 30 days. For its part, Sweden has sizable numbers of armored artillery and air defense systems. And both countries have substantial ground-based air defenses, as well as small but modern navies that bring specialized capabilities for the shallow and congested Baltic Sea. Both Finland and Sweden also boast robust democracies that have demonstrated leadership in cross-government coordination. This could help boost NATO-EU collaboration on a range of issues, such as climate change. And finally, both countries have niche capabilities in a few other key areas, including cybersecurity, outer space, and science and technology. All in all, the authors emphasize that NATO will benefit long-term from including Finland and Sweden in its ranks. And back to Russia, it seems that Moscow's plan to undermine NATO cohesion and credibility has backfired. Instead, its aggression has achieved the opposite effect, directly bolstering NATO's capabilities and presence in the Nordic-Baltic region and the High North.
Small, inexpensive drones are widely available. This has been a boon to hobbyists and commercial industries, but the rise of drones also brings novel risks. For instance, there's a growing trend of conspirators using drones to deliver illicit goods to prisons and jails. Everything from drugs and cell phones to more serious contraband, such as weapons and tools that can aid in escape. Rand recently brought together a group of correctional security experts to learn more about this emerging risk. The conversations revealed that defining the scope of the problem is a big challenge. There are no publicly available national statistics regarding the frequency of drone incursions into correctional institutions. But there is some data to suggest the problem is significant and growing rapidly. In fact, one expert called it an epidemic. Others said their institutions have only a few documented incidents, but noted that some number of drone incidents are likely to go undetected and unreported. Finding effective solutions is no easy task either. There are legal limitations when it comes to certain tactics, such as signal jamming or shooting down and capturing drones. This means correctional institutions must take a detect and respond posture. In other words, they have to identify, locate, and track a drone, then alert staff and quickly search for and recover the drone and its payload. Relying on human observation for this task is insufficient, as most facilities are facing staff shortages. Employing technology to detect drones is an option, but is often cost prohibitive. Further, drone detection technologies aren't always effective, or may not be able to reliably detect certain types of drones. As one expert put it, there are many unknowns with respect to drones. For me, the biggest unknown is what is the best solution for the money. It's clear that many questions remain about the threat drones pose to correctional facilities, but what should be prioritized to help address this problem? Rand researchers offered a list of recommendations that can help define a path forward. These include developing standard terminology and best practices for more granular reporting of drone incidents, establishing minimum performance standards for drone detection solutions, and creating a national data sharing system to report and track drone incidents.
Shira Fisher, a policy researcher at RAND and a physician, wrote this week about the failures of patient privacy laws. The moment patients arrive at any healthcare facility, she said, they lose control of their data. That's because patient privacy laws have two somewhat conflicting goals. They are not just designed to protect individual healthcare information. They also aim to make health data appropriately shareable. Sharing data helps support coordinated care. For example, if a woman ends up unconscious in the ER, the doctor can access information to find out what medications she's allergic to. It also helps public health agencies see data about how infectious diseases, such as COVID-19, are spreading. But sharing data also means that personal health information can be used for medical research, often without a patient's consent or knowledge. If a patient wants to limit how their medical information is used, they can request it. But knowing how to do that, or who to contact to impose such limitations, isn't always clear. And a hospital doesn't have to meet these requests. Protecting patient data while also supporting rigorous and thorough health research is a delicate balance, Fisher says. And we have a way to go before patient privacy laws successfully achieve both their goals. Quote, medical privacy laws should give patients control over their data and allow the sharing of more complete data to accelerate and improve medical research. Right now, we're failing at both.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We're off for the next 2 weeks, but we'll be back in your feeds on April 5th. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.